20. Savitar went into Colossus expecting a war zone, but the absolute silence of Apollyme's dark palace was even more terrifying. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Nothing. It was so quiet that only the sound of his own heartbeat filled his ears. The dark was oppressive and sterile, unsettling, downright terrifying in its own right. Yeah, this had all the makings of a creature feature film and was exactly the type of home you'd expect for a woman termed the Great Destroyer. Zakhar scowled at him as Savitar turned around, looking for the body count that should have been here.
"Is it supposed to be empty like this?"
Styx shook his head.
"I don't think so," he said slowly, stretching the words out. "It's a little too..."
"Normal?"
Zakhar asked.
"Yeah."
Savitar couldn't agree more.
"I could have sworn there'd be more... blood?"
This time it was Sin who weighed in. As the grandson-in-law of the Destroyer, he was well-versed in her more vicious mood swings and bloodbath parties. Zakhar nodded.
"And violence. Definitely expected blood on the walls and violence."
"Violence? You dare barge into my home without an invitation? Oh, violence I can definitely give you, Sumerian dog!" They turned to find Apollyme standing in all her regal glory on the stairs of her palace, glaring at them, her black gown spread out around her ethereal figure and contrasted sharply to her snow-white hair. Her swirling silver eyes glittered like ice.
"Why are you here? How dare you barge into my home?"
To be barely more than a whisper, those words carried more threat than any shout. Savitar cleared his throat.
"We thought the demons would be attacking you."
"So, what? You were going to ride in on your white surfboard and save helpless little me from the big bad demon horde of my enemies? How vulgarly heroic of you, Savitar. But as you can plainly see, I've no need of rescue. Everything's fine and normal here."
"Were you not attacked?"
Apollyme laughed.
"Oh, yes, I was attacked. And I unleashed my tidal and formidable wrath upon the vermin who dared such."
She shivered, as if in the throes of ultimate pleasure.
"It was exhilarating, positively divine and delightful. If you have any more demonic issues that plague you on the surface, please, please send them here for my enjoyment. I've so missed the thrill of the kill, the taste of blood, and orgasmic screaming they do just before they expel that final breath, where they uselessly cling to life but ultimately must surrender to death. Such sweet, precious harmony."
She expelled a breath of supreme satisfaction and smiled in complete ecstasy.
"That is what I live for."
Zakhar looked at his brother and snorted.
Thinking she needs some private time."
Savitar slapped him on the chest, hard.
"Be nice, be polite, or I'll unleash her on you."
He left them to climb the stairs where she stood above him, the epitome of utter icy perfection.
"Are you sure you're all right?"
She passed him a droll stare.
"I would show you the bodies,
but my Karanti are having a feast with them. If you hurry, you might find a few remaining scraps. Maybe a fingernail, a tooth they have yet to consume." She arched a brow.
"Were you truly concerned?"
"Of course, as was Acheron."
Her features softened. She glanced past him to see Styx at the bottom of the stairs. For him, she smiled warmly.
"My beautiful boy. May you rest assured that it will take much more than Sumerian gutter rats to threaten me. However, there is a matter of concern."
She returned her attention to Savitar.
"It would seem Apollo unleashed a nasty disease among the Apollites here. We've already lost a number of them to it. Many more are sick.
The only ones who appear immune are Medea and Stryker. No doubt because they're his children. Even Zephira is ill. I've tried everything I know to offer a cure, but I'm not a goddess of healing.
Is it a curse or a plague?
The Greek bastard called it a plague. An illness, I presume. Can you help them, please?
Those were words he could never ignore when she uttered them. For her, there was nothing he wouldn't do.
Absolutely. I'll do everything I can.
She swept her gaze over his clothing and sighed in total irritation. Shaking her head, she grasped the edge of his wetsuit where he'd unzipped it and pulled it closed.
Will you ever learn to dress as a human?
He snorted at her condescending tone.
Will you ever cease to nag me for my wardrobe?
No. And you reek of sea and sunshine.
It's a revolting combination. She shivered and curled her lip.
Smacks of happiness and good times. Disgusting things, that.
She gave him a light, dainty push. By that alone, he knew he didn't irritate as much as she claimed. If he did, she'd have thrown him down the stairs or blasted him through her walls. She jerked her chin toward the Sumerian gods.
Get on with you now. See to curing my daemons. They need you.
As they started to leave, she called Styx to her side. Styx was bashful as he climbed the stairs and stopped in front of her.
You're not thinking of throwing me down them, are you?
Smiling, as if she savored that thought, or maybe his playful cheekiness, she ruffled his hair.
You dress as poorly as Avatar. I swear, you and your brother, you ever seek to vex me.
She took a moment to straighten his clothes.
I expect a visit soon from your Bethany and the babies. I rely on you to care for your brother and Tori and their sons in my absence.
You know I do.
She nodded warmly. I do. It's why you live.
Kissing his cheek, she gave him a hug. But the way she held on to him, it was obvious that it wasn't Styx she imagined holding. It was Acheron. Apollome cupped his head in her hand before she released him. Her gaze went to Savitar and turned to absolute granite.
Keep them all safe, Thonian. I will not forgive you for the death of another child I love.
I will never fail you again.
This time, she did blast him through the wall before she turned and vanished. Seraphina held the line at the kitchen door. Their instructions were to keep Nala and her warriors in the club and to not allow the fighting to spill into the street where the humans might see them, or into Peltier House where the children, human or animal, could be armed. Nala kicked her back into the wall.
You dare to call yourself an Arcadian and side with the Katagaria? I knew the day you brought that animal home with you that you'd turn on us one day. Katagari whore!
Better a Katagari whore than a demon's bitch. You must have swallowed his nectar whole for him to let you live. Shrieking in outrage, Nala swung at her head. Seraphina used her sword to deflect the stroke and kneed her hard. Nala stumbled backward with a groan of pain. Sarah gave her no mercy. She advanced on her, raining blows as fast and controlled as she could. This wasn't just about her. It was about protecting her family and what she loved most.
Apollo will return us to stone if we don't follow his orders. Is that what you want?
Sarah struck out at her. I won't live my life afraid. That is not part of our Amazonian code, and it's definitely not Draconian. Furious, she swept Nala's feet out from beneath her and disarmed her. And it damn sure isn't becoming of a Basilina. Hem may never, she said, repeating their code of honor. She angled her sword at Nala's throat. Now seize your crown, or lose your head. Suddenly, the fighting slowed and stopped, as those around them became aware of the fact that Nala was no longer in the battle.
that she was on her backside, crawling away from Serafina's blade. Nala stopped moving as soon as she realized everyone was staring at her. Only then did she push herself to her feet and stand with her former haughty glower. Sarah cut off her retreat. "Cede the tribe, or I'll call for a vote." Which, after this pathetically weak display, Nala would lose. And that would be even more humiliating.
"Fine. I'll cede my position as Basilina. But not to a category whore."
Growling, Sarah started for her. But Samia caught her and stopped her from taking the bitch's head in cold blood. "She's not worth your honor, Serafina. Besides, we all know the truth. She gave up her honor attempting to take Max's, and he, a simple Katagari, upheld his vow to you." Sam raked a scathing glare over Nala's body. "The only shame in this room belongs to her. Let her live knowing that. Let it haunt her every night when she attempts to sleep, and it echoes in her head with the voice of the Furies until it drives her mad with the truth." She glanced around to the rest of Sarah's tribe. "As the Basilina for the Thorian Riders, I call a vote from the Scythians. Who do you want to lead your nation? A coward? Or do you choose someone worthy?" Tisiphone stepped forward and sheathed her sword. "Honestly, we just want to go home to what we knew. Scythians are done with the politics of the gods. They have brought us nothing save misery. Our only wish now is to return to our time period at the next moon. None of us are happy here. And while we would be honored to have Serafina as our leader, we respect the fact that she will want to stay here with her mate and children. She has more than earned her peace. None of us will ever judge her for that." Sarah lowered her sword from Nala. "Is that truly how all of you feel?" One by one, they nodded. "Then it is with great sadness that I lose my sisters. But I won't stop you. I know what it's like to live without what you need to be happy. And I wish that on no one." Serafina narrowed her eyes on Nala. "Not even you." But in spite of those words, bitter hatred rose up inside her, and she had one thing she needed to know. "I put my faith in you. I trusted you over even my own mate. Why did you lie to me about him?"
"Because I hate you."
Tears glistened in Nala's eyes as she pulled off her leather gauntlet and showed her palm to Serafina, a palm that bore a Katagari mating mark.
"Like you, I was given to a Katagari bastard. But I held my Dragon Slayer's oath sacred and refused to seal the mating."
She glared at the rest of their tribe.
"They lied to us. The mark never fades. It stays as a forever reminder that I am sterile, and that the bastard who did this to me still lives. My only comfort is that he's impotent."
She raked a vicious sneer over Serafina's body.
"It's not fair that you should have your Katagari mate, and I, the Basilina of my sister tribe, should be without his comfort, should be without children."
While Sarah felt bad for her queen, it didn't justify her cruelty to them. "You had no right to blame either me or Maxis for your cowardice. It wasn't your oath that kept you from mating. It was your own fear." Nala screamed and ran toward her, but Dev caught her and forced her back.
"You need a time out, woman."
He glanced to Sam.
"I'm putting this one on ice. I'll leave you ladies to attend the others."
Sam swept them with a gaze. "It's up to you, my sisters. Behave, and we'll allow you freedom here until the next moon. Start shit, and you can sit in a cage with Nala to wait it out. The Amazons sheathed their swords and stood down. Fang sighed in relief.
Good. Now all you can help is clean up the mess you made.
Grateful to have it over and done with, Serafina had moved forward to help him when someone touched her on the shoulder. She gasped, thinking it was another attack, then relaxed as she saw Falcon behind her. She glanced past him, looking for her mate. Where's Max? The expression on his face made her stomach tighten. What? She gasped. When he didn't respond right away, she felt all the air get sucked out of her lungs as if she'd been punched.
No. He's coming.
Her tone brooked no argument. Max would be here. He'd promised. And he never broke his word. Tears glistened in Falcon's eyes as he gently took her hand and teleported her from the bar into the attic with Carson and a red-headed woman she didn't know. In his dragon form and on his side, Max lay on the ground with blood pooling around him. Carson and the woman were trying to stop the bleeding, but nothing was slowing it down. It ran everywhere and coated Max's beautiful scales. When Carson saw her, he winced.
I'm sorry, Sarah. There's nothing we can do. He took a wound straight to his heart. Honestly, I don't know how he made it back alive and is still breathing.
No.
No! She ran to Max's large head and threw herself against his neck. His faint, labored breaths rattled ominously in his chest and throat.
Maxis! Can you hear me?
I hear you, Sarah Mia.
He was too weak to even speak, and even the voice in her head was nothing more than the faintest of whispers. Tears blinded her as she clutched at him.
You can't leave me. Not now. You promised me you wouldn't break my heart.
I'm sorry.
He slid one bloodied, taloned paw toward her, so that he could touch her hip. Sobbing, Sarah thought about all the times she'd slaughtered dragons in her past, and had taken so much pride in it, had stupidly worn their hides and scales as trophies. Was this her payback for that cruelty? She brushed her hand against his scaly ear and the prickly spine ridges along the back of his skull.
Please don't leave me, Max. I don't want to live without you. I love you. I only ever loved you, my dragon lord.
And then she felt it. The last expulsion of breath as he died in her arms. His entire body went limp. Throwing her head back, she screamed out in misery. It wasn't fair. It wasn't right. Damn you, fates!
Sarah?
She ignored Falcon as she cradled Max's head and continued to cry against his beautiful scales, wishing she could have one more day with him, wishing she'd never allowed him to leave. Why had she ever chosen her tribe over him? Why hadn't she left with him when he'd asked her? This was all her fault. They could have been happy together.
I'm such an idiot.
Serafina, look at me.
It took everything she had to force herself to draw a ragged breath and lift her head to meet Falcon's gaze. She realized that Carson and the woman had left them alone in the attic. And Falcon held something in his hand.
If you love him, really love him, we can bring him back.
What?
He swallowed hard and licked his lips before he spoke again.
What I'm about to do is forbidden. It's the darkest of magic. But I can do it. Only if you mean what you say. Because if you don't, you'll consign both my brother and me to someplace I don't want to be, and to the cruelest of fates.
Her vision swam,
Please, bring him back to me. Whatever it takes, if there's a price for this, I'll pay it.
Then close your eyes. Think of your fondest memory of my brother, and hold it dear. Whatever you do, don't look until I tell you. Understood?
Yes.
She clenched her eyes tight and held on to Max as she thought back to the night they'd first met, to the sight of him stripping her clothes from her body as he kissed and caressed her in a wild frenzy. She could still hear his deep, infectious laughter in her ear at the way she jerked his clothes from him to uncover more and more of his incredible flesh.
"Eager, are you?"
he'd asked with a grin. "Don't waste your tongue with words. I've much better uses for it." Laughing again, he'd obliged her with a searing kiss that had left her breathless and weak. She'd barely loosened his pants before he was deep inside her, filling her to capacity and thrusting against her hips while he held her against the closed door. With her legs wrapped around his lean waist, she'd met him stroke for stroke, growling and urging him on. She'd raked her hands through his hair, delighting in the sensual way it felt sliding between her fingers as he sated the ache inside her. Then she'd run her hands over his strong, broad shoulders and down his back so that she could savor the sensation of his muscles rippling while he pleased her even more. It hadn't taken any time at all for her to come, screaming as pleasure ripped through her body. Then, in the tenderest of actions, Max had cupped her cheek and kissed her while slowing his strokes until he came, too. Still inside her, he'd shuffled backward along the floor, finally stepping out of the breeches that had been pooled at his ankles, until he reached the bed, and then, laughing, had fallen onto it, with her on top of him. There his golden eyes had darkened as he slowly, carefully cupped her breasts in his hands and licked his lips. Her eyes had widened as she felt him growing hard inside her again.
"Still hungry?"
He'd expelled a deep, sexy sigh.
"For you? Famished. Gods, woman. Your breasts are ample and supple enough to shame any woman I've ever seen."
"Then lay back, my lord. I intend to make sure you are well sated this night." For years, she'd considered him her one-night stand that had seriously skidded off the rails. Now?
"Open your eyes, Sarah."
Hoping and praying for a miracle, she obeyed Falcon. Max still wasn't moving, and now there was a grayish cast to his scales. Worse, Falcon was now as pale as blaze. His hair had gone snow white. Concerned, she dropped her gaze from his face to the small bowl he held in his hand that contained blood.
"Are you all right?"
Sweat beaded on his forehead and upper lip.
"Tell me, what do you love most about my brother?"
"The way he makes me feel."
"And that is?"
She swallowed hard.
"Like I can fly. Even when I'm in this body, without wings, he makes me feel like I'm in the clouds, looking down on the world."
"Then breathe into him. Let your breath be his."
"I don't understand."
"Embrace the dragon, Seraphina. Breathe into him."
Cupping Max's snout, she did what Falcon said, then waited, and waited. Her heart clenched tight as Max remained still and pale.
"Nothing's happening."
His hair darkening, Falcon touched Max's body, and the moment he did, a deep, dark crimson light shot through his cells, illuminating them like a flashlight through skin on the darkest night, translucent and bright. Before she could move, Max drew a deep breath and opened his eyes. Sarah gasped, "Max?" He blinked, slowly.
"What happened?"
"Do you remember anything?" Groaning, he laid his head back, then cursed.
"Falcon."
He immediately shifted to his human body to stare up at his brother.
"You broke your oath."
His gaze went from Max to Sarah.
"Sometimes it's worth it. We are brothers, after all."
And with that, Max knew that Falcon had finally forgiven him.
"Thank you."
Falcon inclined his head to him.
"Remember the cost I've paid for your life today. Don't ever waste it, and don't make me regret it."
Max held his hand out to him.
"Never."
Falcon tucked his hand into his and shook it, not as a man, but as a Dracomas. Then he cupped Serafina's cheek in his hand and kissed her forehead.
"May peace and happiness be with you only."
As he withdrew, she caught his arm. "You're not leaving after this, are you?"
"Dracomai are creatures of solitude."
She glanced to Max before she turned back to Falcon and smiled. "But they can learn another way. And I'd like to get to know my brother-in-law." He met Max's gaze with an arched brow.
"You are always welcome at my nest. Especially since we've lost Ilarion."
"What?" Sarah gasped. Falcon sighed wearily.
"Not lost entirely. Temporarily adrift."
He inclined his head to Max.
"I shall stay, but only to help you knock sense into Ilarion. I won't let those bastards take him. Not after everything else they've stolen from all of us. Now rest. We'll have more fights to come. And you have a beautiful swan to soothe."
And with that, he was gone. Sarah turned back to Max. She still couldn't believe he was alive again. Laughing, she threw herself against him and kissed his cheeks and lips and neck and forehead. He laughed, too.
"Careful, love, else I'll think you missed me."
"Don't you ever die on me again!"
"I didn't mean to this time."
Her amusement fading, she pressed her marked palm to his as she moved to straddle him. "As soon as you heal, I want us to bond."
"Sarah..."
"No arguments. Our dragonettes are grown. They will find their own mate soon. But the one thing I learned today is what the Dragonbane really means."
"And that is?"
"Living without your heart. And my heart is you, Lord Dragon."
"Then come, Stradraga. Bond with me. For I know that without you I don't live. I only survive. And that is the bleakest and longest winter of my life."